Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In nearly every home, we've all got that same big old dusty book that's simply lying around. I'm referring to the dictionary. And when we refer to the Oxford Dictionary, we perceive it as the definitive book on the English language. But what you don't think about is how that same book, the Oxford Dictionary, it can be considered sexist.
This is wonderful. Well, it's not wonderful, actually. It's outrageous. You say rabid, they say feminist. Oxford dictionaries have come under fire on social media amid accusations of sexism in its example sentences. A Canadian anthropologist tweeted the publisher last week about the sentences which include a nagging wife for the word nagging and her high grating voice as an example of grating. And now a Twitter storm is brewing, despite claims from the publisher that they'll change the examples. A linguistic
anthropologist... If something that's seemingly neutral, like the dictionary, can be considered sexist, you have to wonder, can language be sexist? Hello, you're listening to the Evening Edition. I'm Kelvin Yee. This is Lingo, the show that's about our relationship with language, how it goes beyond communication, and the impact it has on our lives, cultures, and traditions. On today's episode, we're exploring how the English language can be sexist, and we'll also take a look at male bias in Mandarin. But first, let's find out what sexist language is.
Sexist language, I would define it as language that privileges one gender over another in the way when we speak, when we talk, when we have any kind of discourse over anything, in naming, labeling, action-wise, you know. So anything that privileges one gender over the other consistently, and it's not just, you know, a one-off thing, consistently, that would be sexist language.
That's Dr. Surin. She's a senior lecturer in the Faculty of Languages and Linguistics at the University of Malaya.
And I understand it always seems to be against the female race, right?
Yes, very often it is against the female race. Well, there are some languages that are very female-centric. There are some languages that are very male-centric. English is rather male-centric.
You know, what are some examples that you can bring up?
Well, the simplest example could be chair. You know, nowadays we use the word the chair. I mean, we're referring to a meeting, you know, and you've got the chair. The term the chair itself is rather gender neutral, but it took us a while to get to use that term, the chair, because it was always the chairman, the chairman, the chairman. Or then it became, you know, when women were taking a more active role in leadership, and women have been taking a more active role in leadership, they have been chairing meetings and things like that, but it was always the chairman. So eventually with the advent of the second wave feminists, or what some people call the radical feminists, you know, they insisted that, you know, sexism in language needs to be addressed. And so they started to push for more neutrality in the way we use language. And from there, they came up with a list of terms and things like that, which were more gender neutral and which were more acceptable to use in a social as well as business as well as personal context and political context as well. So the chair became something a bit more, you know, friendly in terms of usage.
And those are the like more obvious ones. Yes. You have the more implied ones, right? Like when you say doctor,
yes,
you think of a man. Or when you say nurse, you think of a woman. So,
oh, that's one of my pet peeves, really, when I talk in class about, you know, representing people, how people are represented. There's always this understanding that a doctor is usually referred, in Malaysia it's less so the case, because, you know, you find a lot of cases, I mean, a lot of female doctors are around. So doctor is a little bit more neutral in that sense, where people tend to think of doctor as could be male, could be female. You don't actually have this image in your mind of being in a particular gender, you know. But nurse is still inherently gender biased, because people tend to think of nurse, the default of nurse is has got to be a woman. And if you're faced with a male nurse, then you've got to put the word male in front of nurse. So that's a very sexist thing to say, because a nurse should be also as open as doctor. It could be a male nurse, it could be a female nurse. Another example would be soldiers. Soldiers is another example. And I've done a fair bit of research on this particular area, where in the army, in military, whether it's America or whether it's Malaysia or whether it's Indonesia, it's very interesting, because people's idea of soldier, straight away it's masculine and the feminine aspect is not even looked at. And so when they want to say, oh, there's a female soldier, they mark it by using the word female soldier or woman soldier, as if, you know, that's a different level of soldier completely. Or the same thing works even with race. They'll have a black soldier, or even with sexuality, a gay soldier. So these are terms that are marked because the default that people expect is masculine of a certain type. So yes, there's sexism in that as well.
You know, overall for English, it seems like there are a lot of terms that make negative sexual references towards women. Can you highlight some? You know, one thing that comes to mind is like when you call someone a chick, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're referring to them as...
Yeah. Well, again, you know, there are lots and lots of words like that in English. And in fact, if you run a corpus study of English, you'll find it's very heavy to these kinds of labels for women rather than for men. You know, she's a chick, she's a hot chick and things like that. Even simple things like the job of an airline steward or stewardess, you know, or flight attendant, which is the word to use now. Flight attendant is more general, gender neutral rather than saying steward or stewardess. The females always almost called as trolley dollies. You know, and you're thinking, well, they're men who push that trolley as well. Why aren't they called anything, you know?
Trolley dolly, as I've just learned, is a term some Brits use. It's used to refer to an air stewardess.
You've got this whole inherent bias against women, and the terms come about. And people use these terms very often unthinkingly. And there's this whole thinking behind it that is very gender biased. Because very often women are seen as less privileged than men, less privileged than masculinity. You know, femininity is seen to be that. The whole idea that women are emotional, men are rational, the whole idea that women talk too much, men, you know, are more, you know, the silent kind and that kind. All of this feeds into the language. And the language feeds back into reinforcing those particular perceptions. So it's not a one-way thing. It's a two-way thing. You know, you feed into society's perceptions, and society's perceptions feed back into the use of the language again. So when you try and break out of that use of that language, people will still fall back into the same habits because that's the mindset. The paradigm hasn't moved, hasn't shifted, hasn't changed yet.
Language is man-made, and that means that we humans influence it a lot, and in all sorts of different ways too. Let's go one step further. How do we figure out what to call everyday objects? Like, why is a car a car? Or a phone, called a phone for that matter.
There's nothing natural about language. It's been created from point one, you know. And it's not as if a particular word is biologically or naturally or essentially related to a particular thing. Why is a table a table? It's because we have all agreed to give it the name table. You might as well just call it a tree, you know. If you had all agreed to call it a tree, it would be a tree. I mean, what my point is that people agree to use a particular word for a particular thing, object, situation. And that agreement has to come in that society, in that community. It could be a global agreement when it comes to English, and it could be something more specific when it comes to the use, I mean, to particular words in particular cultures, you see? So, but there must be agreement by the users to use that word in a particular way.
Societal expectations, culture, a lot of things feed into language, and that affects the way we use it. And that includes gender roles. Just think about your own office environment, for example. When we hear about how a male employee asserts himself, he's described as a leader. But yet when a woman displays those same qualities, to be assertive, some people would describe her as a Why exactly is that? Well, that's what we'll explore after this. You're listening to Lingo on BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Is English then inherently sexist?
Inherently, okay. English is traditionally been sexist. I wouldn't say inherently because you know what? Society puts in their own, they bring in their own baggage when it comes to using language and things like that. So yes, English has been known to be very sexist.
That was Dr. Surin, a senior lecturer in languages from the University of Malaya. And you're listening to Lingo, a show that's all about language. I'm Kelvin Yee, and we're in the midst of figuring out what makes language sexist.
And it seems very socially influenced. So, you know, in society, a lot of value is placed on a woman or girl's appearance, their sexuality. And it seems like it reflects that, doesn't it? You know, you could refer to a man as a stud and that could mean...
Oh, it's
that,
very, very complimentary to refer to a guy as a stud.
And, you know, they could have a lot of sexual agency. But for women, on the other hand, the other word, which I don't think I'm suitable of using that could mean something else.
Yes, agreed. Completely. Agreed. There's again this question of standards by which people are being held here, you know, the standards by which people are being judged, by which people are being evaluated, predicated. Men are held to another standard than women. So the terms that are used to describe, you know, these particular standards that are associated to these standards will differ between men and women. So very often, the men's masculinity and, you know, sexuality involve a lot of agency, involve a lot of going out there and being that stud, being a bit more, you know, assertive in the way they pursue their romantic pursuits or sexual pursuits and things like that. So you've got that. But then the women are supposed to play a more subservient role, a more submissive role. They're the ones to whom, you know, they're the ones being chased. They don't chase, kind of thing. That perception is still there in society. And so anyone who's seen slightly differently would get judged negatively for it. And I'm not just talking in terms of sexuality. This works even in management. All right, in management, I mean, there is that sexual bit of it where women are negatively labeled, negatively evaluated if they are seen to be a bit more agential in the, than they should be perceived to be, you know, within that particular role in society, because that's the way society wants to position them. So, but then even in management, you've got that. Women who play roles in leadership, all right? And you've got this thing when sometimes a man is being assertive, he's being assertive, he's being firm. But if a woman is being assertive, very often people will say she's being aggressive.
Or a bitch. Okay, I had to bleep that, but there's also that other term that's often used, bossy. How many of you have heard that in the office? There was a campaign that addressed that called Ban Bossy. It featured stars like Jane Lynch. You may remember her from Glee.
You are about to board the Sue Sylvester Express. Destination? Horror.
It also featured stars like Beyoncé and Sheryl Sandberg. Sheryl Sandberg is, of course, the author of Lean In.
Pushy.
Stubborn.
Stubborn.
Pushy.
Pushy.
Stubborn.
Stubborn.
Bossy.
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 When I was growing up, I was called bossy.
I think the word bossy is just a squasher.
Being labeled something matters.
By middle school,
girls are less interested in leadership than boys.
And that's because they worry about being called bossy.
We need to tell them it's okay to be ambitious.
Join us to ban bossy.
I'm not bossy. I'm the boss.
Encourage girls to lead.
Bossy, no. Assertive, yes. Pushy, no. Persuasive, yes. It's important to note how these negative terms can actually influence the potential of what someone can become.
And because gender is socially constructed based on what people think a particular gender should behave, how they should be speaking, how they should be acting. And this is, it pervades all parts of life, from what they wear, how they eat, how they talk, what they say, you know, to everything. So based on that, there are very specific roles for particular genders in life, in society. So women are seen very often to be the nurturing, the mothering, the parenting kind. So the gender roles will then assume that the careers that are suitable for women would be the ones that bring out the, or leverage off the nurturing, parenting, mothering kind of, you know, quality in women. Whereas what it does at the same time is not only does it stereotype women, but it denies men a particular access to a particular quality, which they are perfectly capable of. And they do feel it, and they are able to. You've heard many single parents who are men and who are able to do a good job in bringing up their children in terms of nurturing and caring. So parenting is very often a mothering thing rather than, you know, a parenting thing. All right. So it puts men at a disadvantage, stereotypes women at the same time. And all in all, I don't think it does us any kind of justice in society. If you look at the case of the example I used earlier, nurses, all right? There's always the case of nurses are women, again, referring to the mothering, the caring aspect of women. So there are fixed gender roles for women. Yeah, that's the good place for you to be because, you know, you're very caring, you're very mothering, you know? So that'd be a good role for you to play in life. That's a good career for you to play in life. But things change. People, you know, society changes. And that's not necessarily what you want. You find women who take more active roles today. They are soldiers. You've got women who do all kinds of, you know, extreme sports and things like that. It's not something I do. I'm just a lazy person. But, you know, but it's not anything to do with gender. It has to do with ability. It has to do with aptitude. It has to do with other things, you know, but still we constrict ourselves in the way we think by saying that gender prescribes certain kinds of role for you in society. And that particular role, if you don't play that role, then you're breaking a particular kind of boundary in society. And if a man then takes on that role, well, he is then breaking another kind of barrier in society, which I think it's a great thing. So, but I would like to see the term something like nurse be used equally for men and women. Why should we have a term that says male nurse? You know, when nurse is just woman, the default is women. So it should be something more equal for both, because it puts men at a disadvantage. It marginalizes them at the same time, and it stereotypes women and marginalizes women at that same time. So it's a lose-lose situation for everybody.
Yeah, and you know, going back to the idea that women are meant to be nurturing, mm-hmm. motherly, for mm-hmm. example, right, stereotypically. Mm-hmm. And we can see that in language in terms of word pairs, right? You would say king and queen, mm-hmm. Or Mr. and Mrs., mm-hmm. but then you have words like mom and dad. So it's important to note like where they put the first person, right?
Yes, very much so, yeah. Because again, it goes back to gender roles. And in fact, if you look at many ways of pairs, you know, very often we think in terms of opposites. I mean, you know, light, dark, death, life, that kind of thing. We always think in terms of opposites. So gender roles are perfect. They're binaries. They're polar opposites of each other, you know. And so we think of that. But again, it's tied up to what we perceive certain gender roles should be. So teacher-student, that's a less biased. It's more hierarchical in terms of power status. So people will say teacher-student relationship rather than student-teacher relationship. Whereas when it comes to parenting, the mother is supposed to take the more privileged role. So it becomes a mom-dad thing. So, you know, you've got a lot of these societal constrictions, societal perceptions that impinge on the way we use language.
It's easy to trivialize all this. It's easy to brush it off as just people not being able to take a joke. And that we've reached this age of too much political correctness. But as we're beginning to see, that when sexist language is used, it can actually have an impact on people.
Most people will tell you, well, it's just one of those things. You know, they don't think twice about it. But I think the impact is quite grave, because it solidifies, it reinforces particular ways of how we think of gender. And already these things are inherently biased, you know. And this just reinforces those stereotypes. This reinforces those particular things we should be breaking out of, those binaries we need to be breaking out of. Rather than thinking about the differences between men and women, we should be looking at the similarities. Because if you break the body organs down, we're more similar than we are different. You know, if you go down to the cell level, we're more similar than we are different. So sexist language will emphasize differences. It doesn't emphasize similarities. It doesn't bring people together. What you end up is always those pop psychology kind of titles. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, you know, that kind of thing, which again is, you know, completely sexist, because planets don't have gender, you know. Neither do, you know, mythological features. I mean, characters are just mythological. So you've got that kind of issues going on down there. So yes, I think it's got a severe impact, because then it forces people to want to think in particular ways and to behave in those particular ways. It solidifies certain ways of behavior in society, ways of thinking in society, ways that really constrict humans from reaching their real potential.
There are efforts to counter this, like the time you hear someone say, "Hey, you hit like a girl." Let's think about that though. What does that mean, to do something like a girl? Well, I found this campaign. It's called #likeagirl. And it's for a feminine hygiene product. And here, it tries to flip those perceived notions on its head. Have a listen.
Okay, so I'm gonna just give you some actions to do. And just do the first thing that comes to mind. Show me what it looks like to run like a girl.
My hair.
Is like a girl a good thing?
Actually, I don't know what it really, if it's a bad thing or a good thing. It sounds like a bad thing. Sounds like you're trying to humiliate someone.
So when they're in that vulnerable time between 10 and 12, how do you think it affects them when somebody uses like a girl as an insult?
I think it definitely drops their self-confidence and really puts them down, because during that time, they're already trying to figure themselves out. And when somebody says you hit like a girl, it's like, well, what does that mean? Because they think they're a strong person. It's kind of like telling them that they're weak and they're not as good as them.
And what advice do you have to young girls who are told they run like a girl, kick like a girl, hit like a girl, swing like a girl?
Keep doing it, because it's working.
If somebody else says that running like a girl or kicking like a girl or shooting like a girl is something that you shouldn't be doing, that's their problem. Because if you're still scoring and you're still getting to the ball on time and you're still being first, you're doing it right. Doesn't matter what they say. I mean, yes, I kick like a girl and I swim like a girl and I walk like a girl and I wake up in the morning like a girl because I am a girl. And that is not something that I should be ashamed of. So I'm going to do it anyway.
After this, we'll be continuing our conversation with Dr. Surin about the meaning behind the words we choose. But also, we'll take a look at how a group of Malaysians are trying to address what is perceived as male bias in the Mandarin language. This is Lingo on BFM 89.9.
Become fabulous millionaires. BFM 89.9.
Hey there, you're listening to Lingo on the Evening Edition. I'm Kelvin Yee. So far, we've heard plenty about the sexism that's prevalent in the English language. My guest, Dr. Surin of University of Malaya, has given us some insights into that. But there's another language with a heavy male bias as well. Mandarin.
Especially if you notice in Chinese words, in the radical that they have, the female radical, tends to have the words that have the female radical has a very negative connotation.
That's Tan Zihao. He's part of a Malaysian type design collective called Typokaki. Basically, they're using typography to create awareness about biases in languages. As a result, they produced this little red dictionary called Women's Words. I actually came across it online on Wired magazine. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with how Mandarin works, here's a quick 101. Written Mandarin relies on pictorial representations of words. The characters are made up of graphic symbols called radicals. So when these radicals are then combined with other components, it forms compound characters. Get it? No? Well, I don't really either, but here's an example from Zihao.
For example, the word rape or the word 奸强奸, the word rape, right? Or aside from the meaning rape, it also means something that is evil, cunning, and it has the female radical 女. Or the word doesn't need to have a negative connotation. Sometimes the word such as good, right? How. In Chinese, it's how. It has a female radical, but if you look at this character, this Chinese character closely, the female radical is accompanied by another component called zi, which is son, which this basically means that to be a good female in the Chinese society, you have to bear a son or a child.
So back to Mandarin 101, a radical character and another character make up another word. But it's the choices of which radical characters are being used that somewhat influences or perhaps even reinforces certain cultural stereotypes. Zihao gives us another example.
So aside from the female Chinese radical, sometimes the female component plays, it's not really a radical, but it plays part of the word. So for example, another Chinese word I can tell you is there's this Chinese word called an ping an. So an means something that's peaceful or stable. And basically the word is, there's a female, but it's, the female stays under a roof.
Right, so the female radical character is under the Chinese word for roof.
Yeah, the roof is actually the radical. The female is not a radical. The female is just a component of that Chinese character. Now, if you switch this female component to a male word, which is zi, right? The sun, the symbol of the sun, zi, it denotes word or literacy. So if a female, this basically means that we can somehow trace that in the patriarchal nature of the Chinese feudal society is that whenever a female stays at home, we somehow think about peace or stability. But whenever the man is at home, we think of education, literacy, and words instead of, say, peace or stability.
But why is the radical nu, the one representing women, how can that be perceived as male bias? And back to that earlier question, is Mandarin a sexist language?
I wouldn't say it's sexist. It is patriarchal because of traditionally Chinese society, it's feudalistic. And the women has a specific gender role, even within the character Nu itself, right? Because Chinese characters are essentially some of them are essentially what we call pictograph, which means they evolve, as a word, they evolve from a picture or a symbol. And that symbol actually represents a certain visual. So the word female Nu is actually an evolution of a visual representation of a female kneeling down. So the word itself is evolved from this very submissive position of a female.
When you don't pay attention to it, it's just, wow, it's just, that's crazy.
Right. Yeah, and that's the problem that, because of course, when we're using these words, we don't see it as something that is patriarchal. It becomes something that's neutral. So basically, this dictionary, you can say it's a form of, we're trying to historicize that what is considered as neutral, what is considered symbolically neutral, actually has certain gendered connotations that we have to take into consideration.
Do you see this being picked up elsewhere, this movement of putting the female radical and attributing it to female experiences and, well, unique female experiences and then positive traits as well? Do you see this picking up elsewhere?
Well, not really, but the third person pronoun, ta, which means she, is actually a new invention in the Chinese lexicons. There is no ta, so you can see, of course, that as part of a kind of a movement, if we can actually call it as such. But to be fair, actually, the original Chinese third-person pronoun ta is gender neutral, which means it doesn't say that it's a male or female, but now having invented a new word that is attributed to a female, then they begin to see it as there is a separation between the two tas. One is for male and the other one is for female. So, of course, that invention of a new word, a third-person pronoun for a female especially, is probably out of certain feminist concern that is quite modern to the society.
Right, and you know, with your work, do you think it will hit the mainstream? Will people start actively switching the radicals around?
I don't think so, because first of all, it is really a tough process to actually for us to invent a new word today. Dictionary itself or institutions of language, it will take a very long time for us to change. But I don't think the dictionary, the work that we are doing, is to achieve that. But it is really to generate a kind of awareness that the words that we're using are not as neutral. It's just that. And we encourage people to actually look into the history of each word and to study the etymologies of not only Chinese characters, but also words in general, that the very form, the very syntax and morphology of a word, regardless of its language, always have a certain history. And that history is constructed, is constituted, reconstituted through that is not neutral, it's not fixed.
I briefly mentioned about women's words, the dictionary that Zihao and his friends at Typokaki were working on. They chose Mandarin because there simply wasn't a lot of typography projects based on it. Most focused on your Latin characters, you know, the one English uses, your ABCs. And remember, dictionaries also provide examples of how some words are used, like how it would tell you how photosynthesis is used, for example. And with Typokaki's dictionary, they do the same thing, but with a slight twist to it.
Well, in this dictionary, aside from the content, the seemingly political content, it actually has the one thing we wanted to focus is also the multilingual aspect of that dictionary, which is for every single Chinese characters, we have explanations in English and also in Malay, and we have examples in these different languages. And these languages, we're trying to play with the connotations in the different languages that we have. And of course, as usual in a dictionary, you have examples that is stated in a word, in a vocabulary, or a sentence to describe something, right, to somehow demonstrate how people can actually use these words. And in those examples, we try to incorporate some female activists that we know, some female friends that we know in Malaysia that have contributed to the social movements in Malaysia, such as Ambiga, of course, Ivy Josia. So people like that are included in that dictionary as a tribute. So the dictionary itself is not just to challenge the patriarchal nature of Chinese characters, but also a tribute to women in general.
Right, that's really interesting because I think back in December, there was that post that appeared where someone criticized the Oxford Dictionary for having sexist definitions, right? Like if you look up the word shrill, and then you would find, to use that word, they would use that woman has a shrill voice rather than it being neutral. It had like a slightly sexist description of it. So is that what you're trying to do with this one as well? Just trying to counter that?
Yeah, we're trying to do that. And which actually, this reminds me of, if you watch the movie Malcolm X, right? And the main character was looking at the dictionary's definition of black and white. And the sentences that these words give actually has a very negative connotation. The sentence itself is unfairly discriminatory against the black.
That's what Typokaki is doing, but what can we do? We heard from Dr. Surin earlier, and here's what she thinks.
And because it's always so unintentional, right? Mm-hmm. It's unconscious that you think of it that way. How can someone reduce usage of sexist language?
simply by thinking about how you're using language. What comes out of your mouth, you should be thinking about it. As simple as that. You don't say something if you haven't thought about it. Because whatever is coming out of your mouth, you have to take a certain sense of responsibility for it. Otherwise, you'll be going around saying, you know, any old thing to anybody and saying, oh, it was unintentional, I didn't think about it. It doesn't say much about you as a person if you're not actively thinking about what you're saying, you know, to people, and whether that your utterance is going to have some kind of a negative impact on that person or on yourself. So you should constantly be on guard and constantly monitor your own words. So awareness is not enough. There has to be that certain sense of responsibility in the way you use language.
But you find a lot of people seem to be reluctant to change, right? They're just like, it's just like Gen Y nonsense.
Yeah, they think of it as a trivial matter. It's a trivial matter, one. Or two, oh, this is just a radical feminist agenda kind of thing. You know, I'm not subscribing to it. But yes, you know what? I don't believe you can change people's mindsets if they don't want to change their mindsets themselves. But at the end of the day, this is not a trivial matter. I think this is quite an important matter. And it's a matter that needs to be addressed, talked about, and the awareness needs to be spread out to most people. And in fact, everybody should be taking an active role to ensure that, you know, we use language in less sexist manner, in a manner that is less detrimental to groups of people.
At the beginning of this show, I set out to discover if English is sexist. So with everything we've heard so far...
So then, is English a sexist language?
Is English a sexist language? It can be. I'm not going to commit myself and say, yes, it's a sexist language, or no, it's not a sexist language. I'm going to say that it can be, depending on how the users use it. It can be a very sexist language, but at the same time, it can be a very liberating language. It can be a very enlightening language. It can be a great equalizer. It depends on the user.
A big thank you to Dr. Surin. She's a senior lecturer of languages in the University of Malaya. You also heard from Tan Zihao. He's one third of the type design collective Typo Khaki. Typo Khaki is also made up of Carmen Hui and Tan Shui Li. If you'd like to check out their work, you can look for their Facebook page at Typo Khaki. And as always, if you've missed any part of this program or other episodes from this series, you can download the podcast from bfm.my/lingo. I'm Kelvin Yee, and this has been Lingo on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Get to Old Navy for star-spangled style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.